together with Marcelo from Philips. He's working as a software engineer there. And it's about integration of Directive-B in existing software stacks with the example of UHAPI. The presentation is split into two major parts. The first one will be an introduction to the current situation with embedded devices and graphics. And the second part will be the integration itself. In the embedded world, the viewing experience is getting much more important, especially with a threat to digital content. All kinds of new services like video on demand and content management, APG, PDR, require new user interfaces. The usability of these new user interfaces play a key role in offering these new services. Also, these user interfaces have an increasing demand for high quality graphics, like True Color with Alpha Channel, 32-bit. Slick animations and other eye candy. They might want to run in 8G resolutions. Also, the differentiation and scalability is a key aspect in Fusion. Lower-end systems should still be allowed to have lower-end graphics. CE companies require a versatile solution. Altogether, there's an ongoing trend. Much more features that require much more software in the CE products. Nowadays, integration and validation plays a key role in fast time to market. So standardized APIs and building blocks are needed. One of these building blocks is Directive-B. It's a subsystem that provides accelerated graphical operations like blitting, scaling, filling rectangles, drawing lines. It supports multiple graphics and video layers, with extended control over blending and scaling. It gives control over input devices like remote control, local keyboard, mouse, joystick. It has fast analyzed text rendering, image loading. It supports a variety of pixel formats in ARGB and AYV color space. It has an integrated video memory management for on-screen and off-screen buffers. It's an established technology for embedded appliances. And its scalability allows state-of-the-art desktops and embedded environments. The adoption of OpenGL makes it competitive to the 3D market. Another building block is UHAPI. It's an API specification for controlling various parts of the hardware, for example, a tuner, the transport stream demux, an ATC decoder, which includes video decoding, audio decoding, the video mixer, the PVR. As UHAPI says, it's an API definition and it's hardware and implementation technology independent. Its main focus is on home-based media appliances. We are also seeing an increasing adoption in the industry. That's why the proposed CE Linux Forum audio video graphics specification includes UHAPI. For more information, you can go to UHAPI.org. So why Directive-B and UHAPI? Because UHAPI has a focus on audio and video, and Directive-B has a focus on graphics. So UHAPI and Directive-B are complementary. Except where AV streaming needs graphics. For example, both have support for layer mixing and scaling. Roads have been defined and discussed at Yokohama, in Yokohama at the CE Linux Forum Technical Jamboree in June 2005. Overall, it's an optimized system which increases performance because proper APIs leverage hardware capabilities. It has an increased portability due to widely accepted standard interfaces. And it has a much simpler design. You might know this diagram from yesterday or from any other presentation. It shows where the integration focus was on. You see that the application uses Huge API and DirectiveB, and DirectiveB has control over the number of graphics layers that are implemented using the Huge API. And DirectiveB has the graphics acceleration. So the main challenges were writing a DirectiveB system module. The system module provides the implementation of the primary display layer. It also provides the annotation and access to the graphics memory, or mapping memory map IO registers. So on the left side you see the frame buffer device system module, which uses the frame buffer device, which programs hardware and provides the graphics memory. And on the right side you see direct API calls to Huge API for the hardware. And completely independent from that, the allocation and access to the memory. The allocation actually is platform dependent, of course. Only the access is done via DevMan. Yet another important role was setting the accelerator program. So it looks like this one fits nicely. So why put another layer in between? The frame buffer device system module looks like this. The graphics memory is done using MMAP on the frame buffer device, which does the allocation of the memory. The primary layer implementation uses IO controls to have the frame buffer device program the hardware. And an MIO for the registers is also done using MMAP on the frame buffer device. Whereas in the Huge API system module, you only have the memory device for mapping the graphics memory. And the primary layer implementation uses these interfaces from Huge API. You see the set buffer call on the right side. That's the connection between the graphics memory allocation and the Huge API. So there are a lot of advantages of the Huge API system model. It has a simplified architecture and implementation. It avoids going through very limited frame buffer device API layer, because frame buffer device only allows setting the resolution of the layer or setting ARGB formats. And if you want to have YUE formats or want to have blending, scaling control, you have to add private I/O controls to the frame buffer device. And going through the kernel is very complicated to from the application call the kernel, then from the kernel call the application again to call the Huge API components. Also featuring a flexible resource management. When the frame buffer module is loaded, the frame buffer is allocated, is reserved. And in this model, when the application is started, the memory is allocated from the platform, however it's implemented, and that better matches the model, the memory model of Huge API and DirectiveB. The improved interoperability is because there's no kernel in between. The system module directly calls Huge API, and Huge API can notify the system module quite easily via callbacks. If you want to have the kernel notify the user space, it's a bit more complicated, like using signals or block and reads. And it is a modular approach. You see this picture again, as opposed to this one. Different subsystems can be exchanged by this. adding the accelerated graphics driver was the last topic of the integration. As Directive-B focuses on hardware acceleration, However, the hardware acceleration is optional because there are software fallbacks. Though there are good reasons for acceleration. One obvious one is performance boost, but also parallel rendering and code execution, so that the application can continue to maybe interpret Java code even while the rendering commands are executed. We also saw another presentation with parallelism with from Intel, from the CPUs. So this is merely like two CPUs doing parallel work. It keeps CPU resources free for other work, and it reduces latencies, for example, in the user interface. And hardware acceleration is required for high-end user interfaces. Graphics drivers, as they are designed, they are independent and reusable components. So, with the frame buffer device system module, the graphics drivers are not tied to that. They are using the core library to get the physical address of the frame buffer or to map MMIO regions, and the core library is asking the system module to do so. So basically, you could write another system module for BSD and use the same graphics drivers as on Linux without any porting work. They are source compatible. Though the system graphics driver could be tied to a system module. In this diagram, for example, you see there is a library. And there's a system module that uses this library, and there's a special graphics driver that uses this library. These two modules are coupled, the system module and the graphics driver. They could also depend on each other. Directive-B always has well-defined APIs for modules and drivers, so there's a lot of freedom of implementation. You can reuse existing libraries, like in this diagram. You can access kernel drivers, or you can access hardware directly using MMIO. Any questions on this diagram? Or maybe on the slide? The hardware acceleration on embedded systems is a bit different than on PCs. As most PC-based Directive-B drivers have direct register programming using MMIO, they also use busy loop calling for the state, for querying the number of free FIFO entries and waiting for the hardware to become idle. But on embedded hardware, that's not suitable, because the busy loops require so many cycles because the hardware is not that fast. So it's much better to use IRQs that signal finished hardware operations. See that in the diagram. This allows for a software command buffer mechanism. You see the shared memory block there? It's shared memory between kernel and user space. So the kernel allocates one page or maybe a bunch of pages. The user space does an emit on this mini driver. And the user space puts command packets into the ring buffer that are hardware dependent and contain register values or command identifiers. And the actual programming is done in the kernel driver. when the interrupt request arrives from the hardware that the command has finished, the ISR immediately programs the next command to minimize the time that is lost to utilize the hardware when commands execute. When the hardware is idle, the user space needs to do an IO control to trigger programming of the first packet, because there's no IO queue that will arrive when the hardware is idle. When the user space wants to put a packet into the ring buffer and it's full, it simply sleeps for a short time and checks again. So it's idle waiting, it's not busy waiting. Using these IO controls, the user space can also wait for finishing all commands or finishing a specific command, as each command packet has a serial number. Any questions on that? Next topic is the benchmarking. There are two kinds of benchmarks, as you might know. Application benchmarks that provide realistic values for specific application scenarios, for example, the sprite animation. And there are synthetic benchmarks that only provide raw numbers that most probably reflect memory bandwidth or any other bottleneck. In this illustration, you see the application running with and without hardware acceleration. It's not only the increased performance that you have, it's also the reduced CPU load. Because the CPU now only manages the command buffer and programming the hardware. Also a bit different with the UHF API system is the input handling. Usually, you see it at the bottom, the input driver has a thread that does a blocking read on the input device, and as soon as an event arrives, it does a dispatch using the input core API. And with the UHF API system, there's no thread, because notifications are coming in from the UHF API platform, most probably from a platform thread. And the notification handler in the driver translates the event and uses the input core API to dispatch it. So, all in all, DirectFP and UHF API are a powerful combination. They leverage the value of state-of-the-art digital processing at new viewing experience. They are not restricted by existing solutions, like the framework or device API. They have a simplified architecture to implementation by not going through the code, except for the installation, of course. It's a modular approach, and this solution is not specific to DirectFP and UHF API. As I said on the previous slide, integration is a key aspect, and this design improves the application integration using the standard infrastructure and proper hardware abstraction. Any questions?
The benchmarking numbers that you showed, is it only with the for the embedded systems? Is it only with the DirectFP or is it combined with UHF?
It's both using DirectFP and UHF at that point.
Was it very clear, but the UHD, is it writing to a different video level?
In this diagram?
Yeah. So it's writing to a different video level. So what's the role of directive being? Is directive managing the video layers?
Those video layers are managed and implemented in UHD API. Also the graphics layers, but here on the lower end we have the layer implementation in Reactive B in the system module that uses the UH API. So it's a translation of those two. And there could be any number of graphics layers that are allocated to Reactive B or used directly.
In some slides you explained that you use interrupts instead of polling to maximize the performance. You also mentioned here that you have a so-called mini driver. Is that a real Linux driver or is it something outside?
No, that's a minimalistic kernel driver. Using OpenGL competitive in the 3D market.
Is this solution ported to some embedded graphics controller already?
Yeah,
sure.
It's which one?
It's proved 2 EU3. Yeah, 3 that I know of.
Are the silicon motion graphics controllers to use the hardware acceleration?
Silicon motion? No.
So is there a place where I can find out where it's ported to?
Not yet. No, none of these drivers are public yet. But I think it's been thought about.
What are some things that are missing from DirectFB right now? And what are some things what's your roadmap look like for DirectFB?
To stay scalable,
yeah.
To support desktops, maybe get rid of X-Directive-B and have our own desktop environment using the Fusion IPC maybe.
From an embedded system perspective, just kind of focusing more on DirectFB here, if a person's trying to decide whether or not to use DirectFB versus, say, K-Drive or Matchbox, and they have GTK applications, what are the trade-offs there? Is DirectFB the better solution, or what are the pluses and minuses?
You have a much decreased footprint with DirectFB. It's only a few hundred K of a library. Mm-hmm. You can squeeze it down if you remove all those pixel formats. In the recent time, it got quite big because of all those pixel formats that have been added. So if these are made modular, or if they are configurable, or small compared to an Excel, for
example.
And you also need X libraries to access the server, so it's not the server only.
Are there trade-offs other than size? Mm-hmm. Are there trade-offs other than size?
Yeah, the drawing model is different, for example. In DirectFB, you have, if you use the DirectFB windows, the contents is cached. That requires a bit more graphics memory, but you don't have to repaint the application content
just because
it's exposed.
Are there any benchmarks on performance difference between DirectFB and K-Drive for something like GDK Plus?
No reason numbers.
I think I saw something on their website. If you go to DirectFB's website, I think there's something on there where they look for GDK Plus. I don't know what version of GDK Plus.
Binary size comparison is side. But I think my benchmarks.
There's a slide for the dev FP and dev mem.
This?
Yes. Do you provide a generic framework for right hand system module?
No. Right now.
Is this specific to UHappy platform?
Using DevMem, it's not specific to Vue API. That's completely independent. But all system modules using the DevMem approach and using something different for the primary layer are not a. There's no common code base yet for such for this design. More questions?
Are most people using GDPC or CDPC? What's the library of choice for DirectFP? Is it best with GDPC or best with Vue CDPC?
Use GDPC or MicroDPC?
Okay.
Or DirectFP?
No limitation.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any particular limitation with Vue CDPC?
I think it hasn't been tested with DirectFP recently, but. I think it's a useful for the micro, so I'm sure.
I did my own tests and so far so good, but
yep.
Do you have any plans to integrate DirectFP with OpenTG?
Sure. As I saw the presentation of EGL 2.0, I saw that maybe it's the best time to bring these things together. You have DirectFP as the window management and the buffer and context management, and use OpenGL and OpenVG contexts on these buffers, and use DirectFP for the bitmap based 2D graphics for the simple ones. For example, simple plotting. If you want to do a simple copying in the graphics memory, it's very complicated using OpenGL or OpenVG, but using simple plotting, it's just a copy.
So you mean there will be an application, a directed V application that can interpret SVG graphics, animate them and stuff like that?
Or is it if these two are integrated, it will be possible to have one directed V surface where you can execute OpenGL commands, OpenVG commands, or the directed V surface commands. You should also be able to mix them as you go. Or use any DirectFP surface as a texture. Yeah, the new surface core, yeah, that's a preparation for integrating OpenGL, for example. Because right now, DirectFP only supports acceleration when you have a static frame buffer that is continuous in memory. And with the new surface core, it should be possible to have one block of memory for each surface dynamically allocated. For example, creating an OpenGL texture. So it's a bit more flexible then.
Perhaps one more question. Comparing the number of applications available on DirectFP.org, the native DirectFP applications, it seems that they haven't grown that much for 1 year. Are most people using the X API and running a Firefox or X applications instead of making their native DirectFP applications with the API?
There's an ongoing project now to develop an directive key only as a transition.
Good.
So I'm also using directive key as my primary workstation desktop for 3 or 4 years now.
Okay, cool. What's your browser?
Firefox.
Okay.
Using X.
Okay.
But it's flexible. And my time is so limited that I didn't find any time to investigate this or to put some effort into it. But if you want to.